When you use the term wildlife crimes, it's easy to begin thinking about animals and events far away, like the poaching of elephants and rhinos in Africa for their tusks and horns. But wildlife crimes happen closer to home as well, and there's a whole class of people dedicated to tracking and solving those crimes. They include Oregon's recently named Wildlife Prosecutor of the Year, that is Keith Stein, who is a Linn County Deputy DA. Keith, thanks for joining us in the exchange today.
Thanks for having me.
It's good to have you here. We're also going to talk to Lieutenant Casey Thomas of the Oregon State Police Fish and Wildlife Division. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Jeff. Good morning.
So let's talk about what it takes to track wildlife crimes. First of all, Casey, let's talk about the structure. Oregon, I guess, is rather unusual in that the so-called fish and game wardens actually work for state police.
That's correct. Yeah, we're unique in that the Oregon State Police has a division of fish and wildlife officers, much like Alaska. We're the only two states that enforce fish and wildlife laws like that. A lot of other states have their own Department of Fish and Wildlife that has a law enforcement section.
And Keith Stein, in Linn County, does this mean Linn County has more wildlife crimes than other counties, or just that you're better at prosecuting them?
I don't want to say that. I think that 99% of the work is done by the troopers. They send the cases to me, and I basically get all the credit when somebody, you know, actually gets convicted. So, but I'm not sure how we compare to other counties. I know that there's a lot of wildlife crime in our county. I know Linn County has a lot, any place with forested area.
So when we're talking about wildlife crimes, I mean, poaching comes to mind first. Is that pretty much the big one? What are some of the others on the list?
Yeah, certainly there's poaching. There's also, and that's a general term, and I think that when we talk about poaching, we're talking about people that are unlawfully harvesting wildlife or fish or game birds or other things like that. And, a lot of that relates to the general regulations, but there's also licensing violations, other smaller violations we're talking about. When we talk about poaching, I think a lot of people focus on the bigger cases that you see press releases or news releases about. And a lot of that occurs during the big game seasons, just like what we're coming into this fall.
Is it just people who are taking more than the bag limits would normally allow them to take, or just taking them in places they're not supposed to take them, or in seasons they're not supposed to take them, or all of the above?
Yeah, I would say all of the above apply. Certainly, we have a lot of cases where people are exceeding the bag limit. We also have the cases where we're dealing with waste issues, where people either aren't taking all the edible portions of the animal, or they're simply killing animals and leaving them lay and not taking anything from the animals.
Any idea, Lieutenant Thomas, what the usual motives are? I mean, it seems like in some cases this would be food, but then when you talk about wasting animals, then it doesn't seem like it's about food.
Yeah, I can't speak to the motives. A lot of times when we look into these things, certainly there are times when people make mistakes. There are times when people aren't aware of maybe the regulations, but there are times when people, have killed things for sport and left them lay and with no regard to, retrieving the animal.
Mm-hmm. So Keith Stein, Linn County Deputy DA, Oregon Wildlife Prosecutor of the Year, how much of your workload is wildlife cases?
Oh, I'd say it comprises a smaller percentage of, 5 to 10%. Mm-hmm. In our county, we're basically all-purpose prosecutors. We try everything from thefts to assaults but I'm the guy in the office who enjoys the wildlife cases, and so they basically farm all those over to me, and I really enjoy them.
Let's send those over to Keith. Is that the
Yeah.
So what is the attraction? I mean, I'm going to ask each of you in turn then, what attracted you to this kind of work, particularly the wildlife? I mean, obviously you got your law degree and all that, but why wildlife cases, Keith?
Well, I'll be honest with you. When I was a brand new deputy DA, they're really tricky to prosecute, frankly, because, a lot of times the evidence is, it can be difficult to handle, and you have to be familiar with Oregon administrative rules and ORSs, statutes, rules, even some of the smaller regulations. And so I wanted to carve out a niche because, I just sensed that some of the people in the office, it was a lot of work for them to in each individual case to educate themselves on the law. So I decided to become the in-house expert, but I didn't know I was going to enjoy it that much. So as soon as I started prosecuting them, I realized there's some really bad, some bad poachers out there.
Mm-hmm. Did you come to this from a hunting background yourself?
No. And in fact, I don't know how to say this. I was raised by folks who weren't hunters, and I'm from Utah. I wasn't originally from Oregon, and it wasn't until I moved here that I decided I need to go hunting, and I didn't even own any firearms.
Huh.
So I ended up, I have rifles now, and I've been hunting a couple times, and it was pretty neat.
It was a real adult education process for you then.
Yeah, and I felt like I kind of need to have that experience to prosecute people who are poaching, and so I really needed to familiarize myself with all of that.
Lieutenant Casey Thomas, how did you end up in this job? What was your attraction to it?
Well, first and foremost, I wanted to work for the Oregon State Police, and knowing that they had the Fish and Wildlife Division certainly appealed to me and something I wanted to get into. And when I was hired, I was lucky enough to go right into the division. But certainly doing what we do, and to touch a little bit on what Keith mentioned, I think you have to have a passion for the outdoors and for the fish and the wildlife so that you understand how the seasons work and what you're doing out there. And that's really what kind of drew me in, being a hunter and a fisherman. I wanted to have an opportunity to protect the resources and provide opportunities for other future generations to come. But we also focus on public safety and enforcing other criminal laws as well. And so it's pretty neat that I have the opportunity to work in the Fish and Wildlife Division, but also to do some of the other work that the Oregon State Police does.
It sounds like your training is even more extensive, perhaps, than some other state troopers, because you have to be conversant in the wildlife and fish realm as well.
Yeah, we're unique in that regard. You know, we don't always just handle fish and wildlife stuff. We also handle public safety and other criminal and traffic laws as they come up. And so, yeah, I would say our guys are very versed in all aspects of the job, to include the fish and wildlife work.
We're talking about wildlife crimes and their pursuit and prosecution in the state of Oregon. Lieutenant Casey Thomas is with the Oregon State Police Fish and Wildlife Division. Keith Stein is a deputy district attorney in Linn County and recently named the Oregon Wildlife Prosecutor of the Year. You've got questions. You've got some stories you'd like to share. We'd like to hear them. 800-838-3760 by phone to join the conversation, by email jx@jeffnet.org. Casey Thomas, how many troopers are assigned to the Fish and Wildlife Division, and how has that number fluctuated over time?
We have 120 sworn officers assigned statewide, and with specific duties and responsibilities to ensure compliance with all the natural resource laws. Certainly, there's times where we have openings in the division, but generally speaking, that 120 number has stayed at that number here, at least in recent memory.
Is that a popular division to get into? I mean, is it hard to get into the Fish and Wildlife Division?
I would say it is popular. It's like any division within our agency. Troopers have the ability to put in for the position in this division or a criminal division or the patrol division when those opportunities come up. And when they do come up, we typically have more than one person that puts in for it. So I would say it's a popular one. Obviously, I'm a little biased being in the division, but I think it's a great division to work in because you do get to work on kind of all aspects of the job.
Let's talk about some of the challenges in investigating wildlife cases. What are the usual first signs that something has gone amiss, and then how do you proceed from there, Lieutenant Thomas?
Well, a lot of times we get information from the public, and that's one thing I wanted to make sure I mentioned today is that we have the TIP program. It's called the Turn-In Poacher Program, and a lot of people utilize that, and that's how we get a lot of information. It's pretty rare in a lot of big cases that we actually come across poaching, or we come across someone in the act of poaching. And so we rely heavily on information from the public, from other hunters and anglers out there. And then typically from there, we investigate the information that we have, and that can lead us down a variety of paths.
Is there a tip line number or something for the TIP program?
There is. The number is 1-800-452-7888. We also have a email, which is TIP, that's T-I-P, @state.or.us. And if folks call the phone number, that's 24/7. And if they use the email, that's monitored Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. And another place that number can be found is on the back of folks' hunting and fishing licenses and tags.
Okay, so 800-452-7888 or tip@state.or.us.
That's correct.
And then, so Keith Stein, let's talk about the process once the investigative materials have been turned over to you. What's the usual procedure that happens in a lot of wildlife cases, and what are the penalties?
Well, I want to say that typically the reports come in, but with these fish and wildlife troopers, they're pretty heavily invested in the case, so they've usually called me, and we've talked about a case before the reports even come in. But I review it, and if there's probable cause to believe that they've already made that assessment, but if I agree that there's probable cause that it should go forward and there's a legal basis for it, I file an appropriate criminal charge. Sometimes, they come in as even violations or misdemeanors, and the troopers have asked me, could you reduce this to a violation if it's a particularly non-egregious sort of situation? And if it's a, if it's more egregious, then typically we'll file a criminal charge, and they're appointed, or they will hire a criminal attorney, and then the fight is on.
Does any wildlife crime on the books in Oregon rise to the level of felony?
No, it does not.
Okay.
Well, I guess the one exception would be sometimes there are other crimes that dovetail. If there's a felon who's out hunting, then we see a lot of felon in possession of firearm, you know, charges.
Okay.
Along with the typical hunting stuff.
All right. So it's not directly related to the hunting itself, but certainly to the equipment brought along on the hunt.
Correct.
And then, so if we're generally talking violations and misdemeanors, Keith Stein, what are the penalties like for poaching cases and the like in Oregon?
Well, some of the fines, actually, the restitution is set by statute. For instance, I had a guy recently who saw a bald eagle in a tree on his property, and he didn't like the way it was looking at his free-range chicken, so he shot it out of the tree. I mean, I don't mean to laugh about it. It's just, you know, you smack your forehead and you wonder what people are thinking. But I just go to the statute, and it says that the mandatory fine is $5,000. Or at least the restitution amount is $5,000 for a bald eagle. For a bighorn sheep, I think it's, Lieutenant, correct me, but I think it's still $25,000, isn't it?
Yeah, I think you're correct.
$25,000 for a bighorn sheep?
That's right.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a big number. Why so much, such a high fine on that?
Well, just ask any lawful hunter. I mean, this is a once-in-a-lifetime tag for some of these guys. They expend great resources and time and energy, and they're complying with the law, and if they draw a tag like that, it's very difficult to fill a bighorn sheep tag. They're very wily, they're clever animals. And so this is a once-in-a-lifetime hunt, and they're closely managed by the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. So if there's a guy out there, you know, poaching them, it kind of ruins the situation for all these lawful hunters who are doing what they're supposed to. Fine should be set high the more, I guess, special and rare an animal is.
Mm-hmm. We're talking about wildlife crimes in the state of Oregon with Keith Stein, Linn County Deputy DA and Oregon Wildlife Prosecutor of the Year. And Lieutenant Casey Thomas is with the Oregon State Police Fish and Wildlife Division. You can join this discussion on the exchange. Maybe you've got some stories about hunting and poaching and things that have gone wrong or gone well, for that matter. 800-838-3760 to get in by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Back to the bald eagle case. And I was giggling myself as you said it, so don't feel like you're the only one. This person must have known that this was a bald eagle and therefore still protected, right?
Well, there's Lieutenant Thomas would know about this better than I would, but there is an attitude out there among some of the public that if something's on your property, then you can shoot it, and you know that's just not the way that attitude is not reflected in the law. So you'll get that attitude of, well, it came on my property, so I can shoot it.
Okay.
Luckily, we don't have any pandas or unicorns wandering on a people's property, but you kind of smack your forehead and wonder why someone would shoot a bald eagle.
So, Lieutenant Casey Thomas, what are the circumstances under which you can shoot things on your property?
Well, the wildlife is property of the state, and so there's obviously seasons. Which include a lot of regulations and bag limits that all apply. The licensing and tagging requirements sometimes change if you're on private property, but generally speaking, the same state regulations that would apply to, say, a deer season, for example, would apply on your property as they would on public land.
All right, so if it's season to catch deer, you can capture the deer on your property. You can shoot them on your property.
Yeah, with the proper licenses and tags, following all the other regulations, then generally speaking, you'd be able to do that on private property as well.
Help people who don't hunt understand some of the terminology here, like when they hear terms like spotlighting deer. Casey Thomas, what does that mean? What are people doing in those situations?
Yeah, that generally refers to hunting with the aid of artificial light. It's a problem, especially during deer season, because deer at night when they do see lights tend to stop and freeze and they'll look at that light, whereas elk or other big game animals tend to run off. And so people that are out there hunting at night using a spotlight or a flashlight will try and take advantage of deer in that situation, and that's really what we're referring to.
It must make them relatively easy to capture, I would think. The people,
well,
not the deer.
Well, yeah,
both actually.
Well, it's oftentimes hard to catch folks doing that. We're talking about vast areas, and few of us out there at night. And so we have tools at our disposal to help in that process. We have a aircraft program where we're able to use a plane, but it's not as easy as it might sound to try and catch somebody doing something like that.
Well, and then how dangerous is the work? I mean, especially in the field, you're talking about chasing people who have firearms.
Yeah, certainly. You know, every encounter that we have with folks, whether they're hunting or fishing, oftentimes there's weapons involved, whether it's rifles or pistols or knives. But one thing to touch on is that about 90% of the folks we come in contact with are not violating. They're simply out recreating and enjoying the natural resources Oregon has to offer. And so those types of encounters aren't necessarily dangerous in the sense that the person's a violator. A lot of times we are just interacting with the public and maybe educating them on a regulation or letting them know about where we saw some deer or elk or where the fishing's been really good. So that's a neat part of our job, is that we're able to interact with the public as a law enforcement entity in that regard and have somewhat of a unique law enforcement interaction with them.
So you got to have a little bit of park ranger in you too, it sounds like.
Hey, Jeff,
a little bit.
Go ahead, Keith.
Can I chime in for a second?
Sure.
I want to say something about Fish and Wildlife Troopers that's really impressed me. Your question about how dangerous. I mean, I think normally they're just in contact with law-abiding public and things go smoothly, but I've had numerous cases where troopers are out there in the middle of nowhere and the nearest help is 45 minutes away, and they don't toot their own horn about this, but it's just impressive to me that sometimes these guys are alone and they're driving out, like I said, in the middle of the night, dark outside, and you know they're well lit because they're in their patrol cars and they're looking for people who are presumably armed, trained with using their weapons, and are basically kind of caught red-handed sometimes. And so that's kind of a dangerous formula, that combination of things. But I really admire these troopers who go out there, and it's just, they don't flinch.
No, and it's a lot of ground to cover too. We're talking 120 people that you mentioned, Casey Thomas, but this is like the eighth largest state, Oregon. So I imagine there are a lot of areas you don't get to on a regular basis.
Well, like Keith mentioned, I appreciate what you had to say, Keith. There are not a lot of us. Oregon is a big and vast state, and yes, there are a lot of areas that are out of the way, and so it takes time to get there, and they're in between offices, and so yeah, there's a lot of ground to cover, sometimes we have to work with other offices and in these rural areas to try and cover those areas.
We ran a piece in the middle of last year with Captain Jeff Samuels from OSP, guessing that maybe 10% of poachers are caught. Does that number sound about right to the two of you?
I would agree with the captain in that regard.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right, Keith Stein. I want to come back to talking about penalties, because I understand that in some cases you can have your hunting rights taken away for life.
Yes, depending on number of convictions. And now that the statute's been changed to make it discretionary on the part of the judge, but we have the worst of the worst offenders. You know, they usually get suspended for life. You know, I had a guy who I didn't convict him of this, but I think back in the 90s he was convicted of racketeering for poaching bears. He would harvest their gallbladders and sell them to China and then just leave the bear. I mean, it was just, he had a massive impact on local bear populations, I'm told. And then in our county, he came back. He was suspended for life. He came back and was, running beagles up in the hills with GPS and had a gun with him. And so presumably, hunting up there and fell in possession of a firearm. So a guy like that, you know, they should be suspended for life. And, you know, other self-described addicted, you know, poachers who describe hunting animals illegally as an addiction. So, you know, what do you do with guys like that?
Wow, you take away their hunting rights for life and keep an eye on them, it sounds like.
That's right. That's right, yeah.
So you mentioned the international trade in animal parts. I mean, certainly when you go and Google wildlife crime, you tend to get the rhinoceroses and the elephants first. But is there still much traffic coming out of Oregon potentially with people trying to do things like sell out bear gallbladders?
Yeah, we have in a special investigations unit within the Fish and Wildlife Division with the state police that really focuses on that commercialization of wildlife, and there is a considerable amount of trade with wildlife native to Oregon and interstate trade. So they work on those things. We also have the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service that focuses on those things, especially those higher profile cases like the rhinoceros type things you're talking about. But we do have a unit that focuses on those things, as well as the troopers in the field that also are trying to prevent the unlawful commercialization of wildlife.
And how much does the stuff that comes across your desks change over time? Keith Stein, I'm thinking in particular about as wolves move into Western Oregon more, if you're bracing for potential conflicts there, people freelancing wolf control.
Oh, the nuisance cases where animals are wandering onto people's property.
Mm-hmm.
We encourage people to contact Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife before they do anything. Find out if there's, nuisance kill permits, and just inquire about what the state of the law is before they shoot animals. I wish the guy who shot the bald eagle had called Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife to find out whether he's allowed to do that.
That would have helped. It wouldn't. Yeah, yeah. Certainly in his case. What kind of penalty did he get?
Well, like I said, there's $5,000 restitution, mm-hmm. but I don't want to get too into the specifics about the case, lest I maybe reveal something about his identity at this point. But he's he was an elderly guy, so it makes for kind of a tricky situation.
So for the folks who don't know much about hunting, they want to go out and hike in the woods and don't know if they see poachers or not, I mean, what are the kinds of things that they should be looking for, Casey Thomas, if they want to be helpful to the whole process?
A lot of times we just tell folks, if you see something and you're not sure whether it's right or not, give us a call. They can call that tip line number, or they can call any of our offices directly, or they can call the Department of Fish and Wildlife. I know we've mentioned them several times throughout the broadcast this morning, and really we work hand-in-hand with them to protect the natural resources. So if folks are seeing things, they can certainly call us. We encourage them to call us, and or they can call the Department of Fish and Wildlife, talk to a local biologist, and ask questions. And hopefully they can get directed to us if there's a violation, or if it's just something that they have a question about, then the Department of Fish and Wildlife can talk to them from a biological standpoint about that.
The 120 troopers in the Fish and Wildlife Division, is that number about the same as it's been for a long time, or is that a bit lower? I'm just curious about staffing levels, given that there are fewer people hunting.
Yeah, that number's stayed the same as long as I can remember. I don't know where that number's been, in history over time, but that 120 is about where it's been as long as I can remember.
Okay, working on wildlife crimes in the state of Oregon, Lieutenant Casey Thomas is with the Oregon State Police Fish and Wildlife Division. Keith Stein is a Linn County Deputy DA and Oregon Wildlife Prosecutor of the Year. The tip line is 800-452-7888 or tip@state.or.us. Keith and Casey, thanks for joining us today in the exchange.
Thank you, Jeff.
All right, take care.